Epilogue. We were free to emerge from our caves for a time. Some stumbled out grayer, fatter, socially awkward, with worrisome alcohol tolerances. Some had procreated for some reason. Others popped out in the best shape of their lives, ready to mingle and share whatever hobbies they'd acquired, to enjoy the fruits of sacrifice and solitude. Those people were the worst. President Joe Biden's administration fell short of its goal. 70% of eligible Americans jabbed at least once. But the numbers weren't bad. Cases were dropping and, ipso facto, so were hospitalizations and deaths. Hospitals and their inhabitants felt some breathing room. Some called it hot vax summer. The bars and clubs were crowded again. Tableaus of strangers meeting at parties without masks were no longer nightmare fodder, but photos in newspapers. Dating was in full swing, maybe too much swing. As one July 2021 headline reminded us, nature is a buzzkill. Post-pandemic rise in sexually transmitted diseases imminent. I remained captive to this book, but took a break to catch a Colorado Rockies game at Coors Field, always a beautiful place to enjoy a loss. Afterward, the crowd waited for the sun to hide behind the mountains and for the fireworks overhead to display in banging exuberance our American independence. Free we were, but not of ourselves. In Washington, D.C., Republicans united against a Democratic administration's spending agenda had, again, leveraged the debt ceiling to manufacture a crisis. At the worst time, the ability for America to pay its bills and the health of the broader economy were placed at risk. Vaccination rates were dropping. Fights over patents and profit were stalling the deployment of vaccines to poorer countries. Despite knowing viruses care not of such human distinctions. Nature's punishment for such short-sightedness would manifest in variants of the virus we'd not yet conquered. Increased unemployment benefits were going away amid worker shortages at restaurants and fast food joints. Conservatives argued the support disincentivized people from returning to work. Anecdotes from waiters and cooks and cashiers and other essential workers, the subjects of low pay, insane hours, and harassment throughout our dark era, told a different story. Unemployment and free health care had afforded them a mental pause in which they realized their jobs were killing them. They had decided instead to live, to take the time to find something that afforded self-actualization and nourishment of the soul. Implicit in the debate, regardless of one's political leanings, was the recognition that the stigma of being out of work and collecting paltry checks was preferable to returning to American working conditions. Workers were responding to the market as rational actors, but few dared to ask the question, shouldn't we want to live in a country where employment is more attractive than unemployment? From Denver, I flew down to Dallas to see a guy about masks. I'd talked at length with Mike Bowen, but felt he, like me, was an acquired taste best absorbed in person. We met before the start of the workday in the cracking and empty parking lot of Prestige Ameritech. Neither of us wore masks, as was allowed for vaccinated people under current CDC guidelines, which, in hindsight, might have been a lousy guide. He guided me through the building, first to his office, and then the wing where custom-made machines unspooled fabric and sent it spinning along a serpentine trajectory like a miniature printing press, dumping out on the other side the simple devices over which we'd all lost our damn minds. Workers snatched them up and took them to their next destination, stitching on earband loops and branding, depending on the order. That day, it was the standard surgical mask. It all felt too easy. The machines were spitting out millions of masks with clockwork efficiency. But dormant, in one corner, were the bigger, shinier, and more complicated N95 machines the federal government failed to wake up. The company bought them for a steal but never saw the demand to invest the money to get the machines running, a point some politicians in Washington ignored. The machines could have made 7 million respirators a month, Bowen told me through the din of pneumatic hisses and clunks and chatter. In the massive warehouse around the corner, the final batch of FEMA's order was shrink-wrapped on a pallet and ready to be shipped. The orders, the chaos, the machines were dying down. It felt like an ending, I wrote in my notepad. We returned to his office to chat. After a few minutes, Bowen's daughter popped through the door and, at the sight of me, slightly back out of it. She was wearing a mask. Bowen introduced us. "Oh, I'm vaccinated," I said, assuredly. "Yeah, but this whole Delta variant is terrifying," she responded. Bowen's daughter was far ahead of the curve. At this point, little was known about the new variant, and it would be weeks before the CDC updated its guidelines to reinstate mask wearing indoors. More contagious and more capable of causing severe illness, the Delta variant was first identified in India, but was quietly marching through the United States, propelled by a hot vax summer and needlessly low vaccination rates. Those who'd not been immunized were at greater risk than before. More alarming, though, was the news that even vaccinated people could be infected by the virus and transmit it. It heralded to the public what scientists already knew. Freedom from COVID was a long way away. The fall would not bring the salvation we had imagined. Just more than 40% of Texans were fully vaccinated, lagging the national picture of nearly 50%, and the rate of new vaccinations was slowing. Because testing was still lousy, there was no definitive data on Delta spread in Texas, though it had already popped up in Houston and Dallas. As we spoke, Delta was putting on a show, ripping through a Texas prison with shocking efficiency. Of the 233 federal inmates there, 185 inmates were fully vaccinated, yet nearly 74% of the entire population had been sickened. Our hope that the vaccines alone would deliver us was a false one. Not long after my tour of the mask factory, I would get an ominous text from Bowen. The Delta variant combined with irresponsibility caused us to have to ramp up again. The story of COVID-19 was not done with us. 400 miles north of Dallas, in Hutchinson, Kansas, a 75-year-old woman who devoted her life to children had gotten the vaccine and her life back. The lockdowns had made Jacqueline Crossman feel like a caged bird, unable to give hugs or to host family gatherings. These were everything to her. She had taught many children through an after-school program she started decades before, as well with the Hutchinson Boys and Girls Club, where she taught baking and arts and crafts. Without the after-school work, she had grown depressed and angry. As a single mother, Crossman had raised 7 of her own children, 2 girls and 5 boys, the most famous of whom is Dr. Rick Bright. As her son made national headlines through the pandemic, she snapped all the newspaper clippings she could find and stuffed them in her purse. She kept them with her wherever she went to show them off. As with all mothers, his successes were also hers. "She was so proud," Bright told me. At one point, she told me, "You know, why don't they ever mention me in these stories? I mean, I'm your mother. They read all the stories about you, but no one knows I'm your mother." When a Kansas newspaper named Bright one of its Kansans of the Year, he insisted that her name be included in the story, and to her delight, it was. Right after she got the vaccine, she called Bright and jubilantly explained her plans to go outside and be with people again. He warned her that she should still wear a mask, which frustrated her. Life was calling. Despite their famous native son, leaders of Reno County, whose seat is Hutchinson, resisted mask mandates and overrode the recommendations of their increasingly concerned health director. Some citizens protested mask mandates. By late July 2021, the county had a comparably low vaccination rate, just 38% of total eligible residents, despite exponentially rising infections. Among the unvaccinated was one of Bright's relatives. Around this time, their mother had a pacemaker placed in her chest and stayed with them to recover. After 2 days together, the relative tested positive, and she left the house. She came down with an apparent respiratory infection. The doctors wouldn't test her, she told family, because she was fully vaccinated, so she couldn't have the virus, which Bright knew to be untrue. He tried talking with doctors via phone. They refused and instead gave her an antibiotic. 2 weeks later, before a trip to Iceland, Bright talked with his mother, who said she was feeling better, that maybe the antibiotic was working. But 2 days later, on August 17th, 574 days since Bright received that first panicked email from Bowen about an uptick in mask orders, Bright got the call that his mother was dead. She had deteriorated quickly. Anger washed over him. It was everything he'd tried to stop, for the country and humanity. Yet the virus was allowed to fester and strengthen until finally it came for the most important person in his life. Anger always seeks a direction. Bright thought of aiming it at the unvaccinated, of those in his own family who, even after her death, scoffed at masks and doubted the science. He found no comfort there. I thought about it long and hard, Bright told me. And I don't blame the unvaccinated people because they've gotten so much misinformation, and I can see where it can be extremely confusing on what is the right thing to do. Politics are playing a role, misinformation about public health officials, unclear guidance from the CDC and others the last few years. I can see why people would be confused, he said, and even a little skeptical. He choked down the anger and returned home. In those final days, Bright's mother behaved as tough people do, not burdening anyone with her own feelings. Bright wanted to know what he had missed. He began rummaging through her things, communing with the tangibles that proved she was once among us. In doing so, he came upon her phone. He tapped into her search history. Over her final 2 weeks, day and night, all alone, she had been looking into one thing: the signs and symptoms of COVID-19.